Start us off.
Oh, this is a tough.
Okay. No Masechet, Moed Katan, got Murad and myself. Of course, the rabbi.
Okay, so we're starting Masechet Moed Katan. Just a little bit of intro to the Masechet in general. The main topic of this Masechet is going to be discussing the laws of Chol HaMoed. So what is Chol HaMoed? I think Chol HaMoed is one of these concepts that is not often understood the right way by people. So Chol HaMoed is, by the Torah's admission, a Mikra Kodesh. It is something which has days of sanctification. It's a holy day. It is true that it does not have the same prohibitions in terms of melacha. So just to give you a little bit of what the Gemara over here says, the Gemara brings a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Sheshet yamim tochal matzot, uboyom ha-shivi'i atzeret adonai Elohecha lo ta'ase melacha." For 6 days, this is talking about Pesach, for 6 days you're going to eat matzah, and on the seventh day you're going to have an atzeret, you're going to have a work pause, right? For Hashem, you're not allowed to do melacha. So here the Torah does something interesting. It compares the 6 days prior to the seventh day of Pesach, right? Where you're going to eat matzah. And then the seventh day it tells you you're going to have a stoppage, a work stoppage, right? So the rabbis understood here that the Torah is making a connection between the 6 previous days and the last day, right? Mashivi'i atzur av sheshit yamim atzurim. Just like there is an element of stopping from work on the seventh day, so too there's an element of stopping from work on the previous 6 days, including Chol HaMoed. In other words, that there are certain things that the Torah is hinting to us, you're not allowed to do even on the middle days of Chol HaMoed. So then the Gemara asks, well, so then if that's the case, maybe we should just make 7 days of Yom Tov and everything should be forbidden. They say, no, Bayom HaShivi'i atzeret. Specifically on the seventh day, there's going to be a stoppage from certain workings that you're not allowed to do on that day that you would be allowed to do the other day. In other words, what the rabbis are getting from over here is that on the one hand, the 6 days prior, including Chol HaMoed, are forbidden in certain kinds of work, but certain things that are only forbidden uniquely on the days of Yom Tov that are permitted on the holiday of Chol HaMoed. And so the rabbis understood from here that they were given a license. The Gemara says the rabbis were given the license to determine which kinds of actions are permitted on Chol HaMoed and which kinds of actions are forbidden on Chol HaMoed. And our Masechet is going to go through in depth what kinds of things the rabbis were okay with a person doing on Chol HaMoed, which kinds of things they forbade that they didn't want people doing on Chol HaMoed. And the basic idea of why they would forbid certain things is because they want people to be free to have the opportunity to study more Torah, to experience the holiday, and to not be bogged down with certain kinds of work and certain things that they don't want them to be doing that would take that would distract them from the ability to experience the holiday even on those days. On the flip side, to do 7 days of no work whatsoever would be very, very difficult. There's what they call things that are davar ha'aved, right? Things that will cause a person significant loss if they're not able to do it. And so those things, to make it simple, things that the rabbis viewed as davar ha'aved, something that will cause a significant loss to a person, the rabbis allowed those things. Things which they felt were not so significant, or there was a way to avoid doing it, or wasn't something that was so pressing, the rabbis said to stay away from it. That's a very simplistic version of it, but we'll see how that comes out as we go through the Mishnayot. The last thing that we'll mention is doing work on Chol HaMoed Asur from the Torah or from the rabbis? So, right, the rabbis are the ones who are defining the parameters of this, but when they're defining the parameters, is the things that they say that are forbidden then become forbidden from the Torah, or are they forbidden from the rabbis? So most of the poskim, the Rosh, the Rambam, and others seem to say over here that work is forbidden on Chol HaMoed midrabbanan. The rabbis understood it from what the pesukim, that there was something there, but then everything that they decided is going to then be asur midrabbanan.
See that it could be midoraita, because
yes,
obviously it's coming from the way you would read the Torah, you maybe would do all 7 days. So now they're saying, okay, no, this is, so whatever they're forbidding would seem to me midoraita.
Right, so then you can argue on that what the rabbis are seeing inside of the text over there is their own interpretation, and it's more what they call like an asmachta. They're relying on those psukim to draw their license, but ultimately they're creating their own thing that's forbidden in terms of melacha. And this is the language of the Rambam. I'll just read it to you in a minute. In the laws of Yom Tov, he writes, "Holo shel Moed, Chol HaMoed, af al pi shelo ne'emar bo Shabbaton." Even though it doesn't say the concept of Shabbaton, which means to completely rest from all work, "Hoil v'nikra mikra kodesh," since it is called a day of calling of sanctification to Hashem. Harehu zman hagiga b'mikdash. It was a time of celebration and festival in the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, asur ba'asiyat melacha. It's forbidden in certain kinds of work. Kedei shelo yeh kishar yemei hachol. In order that these days should not be the same as every other days, every other kind of weekday. To simply treat it as a weekday would be a desecration of the mo'ed. She'en bahem kiddusha kila. The other days don't have any sanctity. These days have sanctity. V'ha'oseh bo melacha. But someone who does melacha on these days that is forbidden, makin oto makat mardut. They hit him with lashes of rebellion. Now, that language, makat mardut, when we say that a person is given lashes for rebelling, who are they rebelling against?
Rabbis.
They're rebelling against the rabbis. That's automatically a cue that what we're talking about over here is something that they're violating midrabbanan, and the Rambam doesn't even leave it to speculation. He says, mipene, because she'isuro midivre sofrim. The prohibition is from the scribes. It's from the rabbis. But not every kind of melacha is forbidden like Yom Tov. Because in the end of the day, the reason why the rabbis forbade these things was just because they wanted to make a sort of separation between these days and regular days of Chol. For this reason, there are some things that are forbidden, there are some things that are permissible. And so that's the head that we're coming into this masechet with, to understand the differentiations and the distinctions that the rabbis made here between things that are asur and things that are mutar.
Aren't you making a little bit of a distinction during the prayers of the week? It's not the same.
Yes, the tefillot definitely reflect that distinction, but it has to go beyond that. It also has to be in terms of a person's behavior and actions on that day, right? Because Rosh Chodesh also has different tefillot, and Hanukkah also has different tefillot, and those are days that are completely permissible to melacha. Those are days that are not as sanctified as the days of Chol HaMoed. Okay, last point that we'll mention in introduction is the name of this masechet is called Moed Katan, because it is like the small, it's distinguished with it between the whole Seder, which is called Seder Moed. We're talking about Moed Katan, we're talking about the actions of the holidays, but it's like on a lower level because we're talking about Chol HaMoed rather than Yom Tov. Hence the name of Masechet Moed Katan. Let's read the first Mishnah. Mishnah Aleph. Mashkin Bet HaShelachim B'Moed U'B'Shivirit. It is permissible to water or to water or irrigate a field which is known as a Bet HaShelachim, which we'll explain in a minute. You're allowed to do this on the Moed, on the holiday. We're talking about Chol HaMoed. U'bashivirit. It's also permissible on the Shemitah year. Ben Mima'ayan Shiyatza B'Tehila. Whether we talk about a spring which popped up, it opened up on the holiday. Ben Mima'ayan Shelo Yatza B'Tehila. Whether it was a spring which had already been in use. Mm-hmm. So the halakha over here is telling us that if you have a field which is called a Bet HaShelachim, a Bet HaShelachim, the Rabbeinu Obadiah over here explains from the language of like tired and worn out, is a field which constantly needs to be watered. It's not sufficient to receive just rainwater. It doesn't store water like that. It has to constantly be watered. And therefore, when there's no rain, or on days that it doesn't rain, it still needs irrigation. Right? So that kind of a field, says the Mishnah, because it's a davar ha'aved, if you don't water it, it will completely ruin and become destroyed. So it's permissible to irrigate it on Chol HaMoed as well as on Shemitah. Even though Shemitah is forbidden in digging in the ground and planting, this is not one of those actions that's forbidden to do on Shemitah. So that's permissible. And it doesn't matter if you're doing it from a spring. So the spring sort of creates the flow of water. All you have to do is, you know, open up the irrigation. It doesn't require a tremendous amount of effort or burden to be able to do it. It requires a little bit, but not so much. And so the rabbi said this is something that could be permissible on the holiday and on Shemitah, whether it's a new spring or an old spring. Aval en mashkin lo mimeme geshamim velo mimeme hakilon. But it is forbidden to water such a field from rainwater, meaning if a person gathered up, had a pit, and he gathered up water, now he has to draw up the water by hand and pick it up with a bucket and run it around his field, watering everything. So that the rabbis felt like, A, was too much of a burden, was too much of a tirha on the person. And so therefore, that was forbidden. And the same as Memeha Kilon is pretty much a similar idea. It's a very, very deep pit, which water had to be drawn with a lot of effort to be able to go out and water the field. And so the rabbis felt that this was something which required a tirha yetera, a tremendous amount of burden and responsibility to do. And that would take a person all day and would completely distract him from the Mo'ed. And so therefore, this became forbidden. A person was not able to do that on Chol HaMoed. Ve'en osim ugiyot la'gifanim. It is forbidden to make ditches or furrows around the vines or around certain kinds of trees in order to pool up water so that it could store up. That was also forbidden. You could not dig those ditches around the trees on Chol HaMoed. That had to be done from beforehand. So already we're starting to see certain leeways that the rabbis allowed, certain things that the rabbis were okay with because they weren't so burdensome and it could lead to a loss, significant loss on the person. On the flip side, there are things that because they require a tremendous amount of effort and burden on the person that would distract him from the day, so the rabbis forbade that. Even in the case of somewhat of a significant loss, this extra burden is a factor that the rabbis played with, that certain things should be allowed and certain things shouldn't be. So while this may not necessarily affect us because we're not an agricultural people, the concept is that the Torah does not want, that the Hachamim don't want us doing things in our businesses or in our daily routine that requires a tremendous amount of exerting a tremendous amount of effort.
So is it safe to say go to work and be more lax than usual? Or do things that don't require so much.
I might say. I mean,
physical.
It seems like a physical thing. It's definitely a physical thing, and that act.
Could you say? A guy goes to the office and gets home at 8, come home by 6. In other words, try to differentiate a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, in general, my recommendation to people always on Chol HaMoed is to try to minimize how much work a person can do in general. Again, because now you're talking about performing business and transactions, we'll get to that a little bit later, but that's also a similar concept of how much does a person need to do? Is he going to incur a significant loss? Are you getting profit over here? Or are you avoiding principal loss? These are questions that have to be asked. And so really, the more a person can limit his work and his transactions on the Moed, the better off he is. That's really
seems a lot to of it is public. I know a lot of them, later on, they talk about doing things in public because they don't want you to see other people doing it. And then you say, oh, this guy's mowing his lawn.
There is a Marit Ayin factor, but that's not being introduced to us at this point.
No,
we'll see what that comes out in the future. Okay, let's go to Mishnah Bet, and I want to try to do Mishnah Gimel also because these three Mishnayot are kind of a set together. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, "En osim et ha'amma b'techila b'moed u'b'shivi'it." It is forbidden for a person to dig an irrigation canal in its inception, to create it, b'moed u'b'shivi'it, on Chol HaMoed or on Shemitah. So again, this is another action that in the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, digging up something into the ground was something that's considered pretty heavy duty work. Mm-hmm. And so to dig an irrigation canal, l'chatehila, not that you're fixing an old one, but you're digging a new one on the holiday would be forbidden, as well as on Shemitah. V'hachamim omrim, however, the rabbis disagreed. They said, osim et ha'amma b'techila b'shivi'it, a person is permitted to dig a new canal on Shemitah. That's not forbidden because he's not digging. The act of digging into the ground on Shemitah that's forbidden is to dig in order to be able to plant, is to plow to be able to plant. Here he's not doing that to plant. He wants to be able to water his crops that are already there that are going to grow for other people to take. And so therefore that's not considered a labor that the Torah would forbid on Shemitah. So according to the rabbis disagree with the Elazar ben Azariah. They said, you can dig an irrigation canal, a new one on Shemitah. As far as Chol HaMoed, here watch, Chol HaMoed is stricter than Shemitah. Umetaknim et ha'mekul kalot b'moed. But the rabbi said, you cannot dig a new one on Chol HaMoed, but you can fix one that broke. If your irrigation canal, caved in or dirt started to get into that, you can fix it on the Moed, on Chol HaMoed. But you cannot make a new one. Okay? That's the Hachamim's disagreement with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. On that concept of fixing things that have broken, the Mishnah now says that it's permitted to do any kind of fixing for public needs. It is permissible to fix anything which will cause the water in the public area to become bad. So in those times they had public wells or public springs or things like that, or public ditches where water gather. And so sometimes if dust started to get into there or it started to break down and ruin the water, that would be a big problem. So that would be something that you needed to fix for the community. To fix something for the community needs is permissible on Chol HaMoed. V'hotetin otam, you're allowed to clean them out and resurface them and everything, anything that's necessary. U'metaknim et ha'derachim, we fix the roadways. You could do construction on the roads, in the streets, any mikvehs that need to be done for people to dip dishes or to dip for tahara. We do all of the needs of the public. Anything that the public needs is permissible to be done on Chol HaMoed. They would whitewash and make a sign on the graves. Now, why would they do this? Mitzayinim means to mark. They would mark the graves. Why would they mark the graves? Because
what? It's a flood. It's a rain.
No, more simple than that. On the holiday, people have to be pure. They're bringing korbanot. They're going to the Beit HaMikdash. People are visiting the temple, right? So they have to be pure. So they wanted to, they did this prior to the holiday, but also on the holiday itself, they would mark off the graves so that people would know where the cemeteries were, where the graves were, so that they don't come in contact with dead bodies and become impure, right? So that was something that was also necessary for the public in order to not become impure and then not be able to do their korbanot and their visit to the Beit HaMikdash. Right, so. Correct.
That's right.
The rabbis also would send messengers to inspect people's fields about the concept of kil'ayim. Kil'ayim is planting or growing two different kinds of fruits or vegetables together, grafting or growing them in very close proximity to the point where they would now, you know, sort of lock in on each other, the roots that sort of bind together, and now you're growing them together and they mix. Kil'ayim is a form of mixture that's forbidden. It's mixtures and planting. Right.
No good?
No good. It's a sur. Right? It's a sur from the Torah. If a non-Jew grafts something, right, then you
like
can have... Right,
whatever,
so non-Jews right. Can do that and then you could benefit from them. But a Jew is not allowed to plant in such a way. That's called kil'ayim. So the rabbis would send out messengers to inspect people's fields to make sure that they were not violating the issues of kil'ayim. Normally they did this right before Pesach time. They would do this in the month of Adar. The Mishnah Masechet Shekalim says, we'll see it when we get to that Masechet. The 15th of Adar is when they used to send out the messengers. But the Mishnah over here says that the messengers that the rabbis sent out would have to be paid. Right? Mm-hmm. You have to pay them to go ahead and right. Do it. Now, if I send them out on a regular day, I'm going to have to pay them much more because they're losing out on their work that they could do for their own businesses, right? It's like jury duty, right? Wow. They gotta pay you because you take him out of work. So these the rabbis, when they send people on the messengers to inspect people's fields, they would have to pay them a lot of money because they were going away from their own businesses. The custom developed then for the rabbis to send them on Chol HaMoed. Why would they send them on Chol HaMoed? Because since they're not doing their own work anyway, you don't have to pay them as much money, and it would save the Beit HaMikdash some money to have to send out these inspectors. And so a custom developed in that sense. So all of these things, this is a very big point and does have a lot of practical applications, that anything that is necessary for the public needs is permissible to be done on Chol HaMoed. Even if it requires a lot of work, even if it requires construction, labor, it doesn't matter. It's for the public needs. And it's a pressing issue, it's permissible to be done on Chol HaMoed. Good?
Good.
Let's do one last Mishnah because it kind of connects to the first Mishnah that we talked about. The next Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Yaakov, says, Moshchim et ha-mayim me'ilan le'ilan, ubilvad shelo yashke et kol ha-sadeh. A person is allowed to pull the water that pools up and from one tree to the next tree, as long as he doesn't water the entire field. So I'm going to go with one of the two explanations, a few ways to understand this Mishnah. I'm going to go with the simplest way, which is that the first Mishnah was talking about a field called a Bet HaShelachim. A Bet HaShelachim is a field that needs to be watered constantly. The field that we're talking about in this Mishnah is a field which is called a Bet HaBaal, a field which does not require, and that's why it's mostly trees. Trees and orchards don't need to be watered consistently. They pretty much suffice mostly on rainwater, maybe a little bit of extra water, but they don't need constant watering on them. And so this is called a field which is known as Bet HaBaal. It suffices with whatever it gets. And so now the situation is a little bit less dire, which is why over here the Mishnah is not telling us that you're allowed to water the field. But what happened? It rained, let's say, and it rained, and one particular tree, let's say, had a groove or something, and the water pooled up, right? Another tree maybe didn't get as much as it needed. And so you want to create a tunnel or something like that to be able to pull some of the water that pooled up by one tree over to another tree that might need a little bit more, right? It's not watering it, it's not as labor intensive, and it's not as necessary, it's not as dire, right? And so the Mishnah, according to Be'ez Minago, says this is permissible. Moshchim et ha-mayim me'inan le'inan. Despite it not being so dire, He says it's permissible to do. It doesn't require a tremendous amount of labor, and you're not watering it, and so that's permissible. Ubilvad shelo yashke et kol hasadeh. As long as he doesn't start doing this to the entire field. Once he starts doing it to the whole field, and it's not something which is necessary, then becomes forbidden. Right? So here, watering the whole field is forbidden. In the first Mishnah, watering the whole field was permissible. And the idea is very self-evident. It's because the Mishnah in the first one is talking about a field that needs constant water. It's much more dire. This Mishnah is not as much, which is why we're a little stricter over here. The Mishnah concludes with the following statement. Zera'im sheloshatu lifnei ha-moed. Seeds or plants which did not drink water prior to the holiday, lo yashkem b'moed. According to the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he's strict to not allow you to water them on the moed. What's the reasoning behind that? If you didn't water them before the holiday, you can't water them on the holiday.
You don't need it. Maybe it's not.
Exactly. If you didn't water them before the holiday, that shows that they're not in something which is in dire need of being watered. So to water them on the holiday seems to be superfluous. There could also be the idea that the more you water something, the more it needs to be watered. It's almost like a catch-22. So they're saying, if you watered it before the holiday, then you're going to have to water it again on the holiday, because once you start the watering process, you got to keep going, right? It's almost like if you planted something in the ground, but you left it alone, so just leave it there, nothing happens. Once you start the watering process, now you got to keep going, otherwise you get stuck, otherwise the thing dies, right? So that it's a little bit of an interesting idea. So that's what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says. If you started to water them from before the holiday, then you can continue water them on the holiday. If not, then you can't. But the rabbis again are more lenient. They say in all kinds of situations, if you're talking about this kind of a field, if you're talking about the bet taba'a, which doesn't need constant watering, it just needs here and there, it's not such a big tirha, it's permissible to do it on the mo'ed, and it's not a problem. Even if you didn't water it before, you could still water it on the holiday. The halakha here, however, follows Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, follows the stricter opinion. So just to summarize what we did today, we talked about a concept that tirha plays a very big role in what we do, the amount of energy and effort a person has to exert, the burden that it caused to do a particular melacha is going to be very, very important when we factor in, can I do it on the holiday or can I not, as well as the significant loss that occurs, how dire is the situation. Right. If the situation is more dire, like in Mishnah Aleph, so then it's going to be, you know, permit more. If it's not as dire as in Mishnah Gimel, so then you're not going to allow as much to take place. And I think the biggest thing was Mishnah Bet, was that all things that are necessary for the public, fixing roads, building things, mikvaot, whatever it may be, is always going to be permissible on the Chol HaMoed. What's interesting is, I do remember specifically, there was a question, I don't remember what the rabbi did. Can you build a shul on Chol HaMoed? It's an interesting question. Can you allow construction on that? From this Mishnah, it would seem like it's something that the public needs.
No, it's a yes.
Right? So something that you should do. I'm going to double check, but I think though that Rabbi Aluf, when he was talking about the Ahava Be'ahava, he said that he didn't want it being built on Chol HaMoed, even through a non-Jew.
I think maybe because it's not like, maybe the public needs a pressing need.
It's not a pressing need at that moment.
Like, you're not opening the shul tomorrow.
Right, exactly. So that's one idea. So that takes care of that. Okay. Baruch Adonai Olam, Amen V'Amen.